Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Finsider Radio. I am your host, Matthew Cannata. I'm joined by Sutton and House. And of course, behind the scenes, James McKinney.
Gentlemen, the Miami Dolphins, for 1 week at least, we feel like we're the champions. I mean, you come off a dominating win against the Pittsburgh Steelers, 30-15. The score makes it seem closer than it was. Last week, you remember, we didn't even play an intro because the Dolphins didn't deserve any intro last week. We couldn't play their fight song. We couldn't even think about just putting those words on there. Of them, you know, scoring from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. But damn it, they came back on Sunday and they played one hell of a football game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it was a complete domination, folks. It was absolute complete domination at the line of scrimmage. Both sides of the ball, the defensive line was pushing through, sacking Big Ben Roethlisberger, injuring him, making him not the same when he came back. The offensive line was just making huge holes for Jay Ajayi, who had over 200 yards rushing, the first 200-yard rusher in the NFL this season, number one in the league currently for yards after contact, and that is a huge thing for running backs in the NFL, is what you can do once you're hit by the first ball, by the first defender. And Jay Ajayi, folks, has proven that he can be that bell cow running back. If you remember way back in the beginning of the season, even in training camp, Jay Ajayi was in the doghouse. Remember, this was the guy they didn't even bring to their first trip to Seattle in week one because he was pouting that he wasn't named the starter. This was a guy that literally was on the verge of being cut in training camp. And yes, that is some inside information. He was on the verge of being cut in training camp. The only thing that saved him was the fact that the Dolphins had a bunch of injured running backs between Isaiah Pede, Damian Williams with his injury earlier, Arian Foster with his injury history. All those things helped Jay Ajayi keep a roster spot. And it's nothing that you might say, well, isn't that bad that the coaches wanted to cut Jay Ajayi early in training camp or later in training camp, and now he's doing this good, so what does that say about our coaches? To me, it's the opposite. To me, these coaches have instilled a sense of maturity in Jay Ajayi and have really showed him how to be a true football player and a professional. And it's not just the coaching staff. Make no mistake about it. You better believe that Arian Foster has had something to do with this turnaround as well. And when Arian Foster was signed, I labeled it as a no-risk, high-reward type situation. Literally, there was no risk in signing Arian Foster. We knew that he was going to come in and do his best, most likely get injured. But what I also did say is that his leadership and the veteran ability he brings to that meeting room with a bunch of young running backs is invaluable. And if you talk to anybody in any NFL locker room or any NFL front office, they will tell you the exact same thing. And we're going to talk about that on the defensive side of the ball a little later on with Rashad Jones. Because I did talk to someone today, not today, but the other day in Davie, about the kind of impact losing Rashad Jones would have, not only on the defense, but this entire football team. But that's for later in the show. But going back to Sunday's game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, Sutton, I'm sure you're watching with the rest of us jumping up and down on your sofa, throwing beer in the air, waving your hands like you just don't care. What have you taken away from Sunday's game?
Well, I just remember texting you guys during the game and just thinking to myself, like, what exactly am I watching right now? I just felt very weird that we were, you know, a week removed from getting our asses kicked by Tennessee, a 2-4 team now, and we're going into a 4-1 game, and we not only have Jay Ajayi go for 200 yards rushing. We have Byron Maxwell, who's been benched, step up and play really respectable D on Antonio Brown, best wide receiver in the NFL. Le'Veon Bell never really got going. Ben Roethlisberger throws two interceptions, gets sacked a couple times. He gets dinged up. I mean, there are just so many crazy narratives laced into one game. It's really hard to process all this, considering how we felt after that Tennessee game. So I just kind of want to cherish this moment that, you know, our team can actually pull something like that together. And really, you said it earlier, MC Money, we won in the trenches. That's really where I saw the biggest swing from the previous week. We just dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. So we were, of course, able to open up the running lanes for Jay Ajayi. We kept Tannehill clean all game long. We were getting Roethlisberger in passing situations. So it was nice to see those trenches take over and really solidify that win for us. And did anybody see Steelers players puking? Did anybody else see that?
Yeah, that was awesome.
I saw some Steelers players kneeled in the end zone. I think it was probably midway through the third quarter, just puking their guts out. So
yeah, I saw the replay of that, and that was just absolutely insane. But House, what did you take away from Sunday's game as well? I know we got differing opinions on everything. Everyone takes away something different. So for me, it was the play in the trenches for Sutton. It was the other various things that happened throughout the game. You know, sitting on our seats, waiting for something bad to go wrong, and I actually texted you, Sutton. I'm like, I'm not getting excited. I'm just waiting for something to go bad right now. I'm just waiting for the Dolphins to lose the game. House, what were you? Were you at the game? I think you said you were going to the game, but then you missed the train, or was I just imagining things?
No, we made it to the game, but we got stuck in a train for like 40 minutes before the game. So some people think that might be an omen for Jay Ajayi's big day. But anyway, for me, I mean, this is the first time our offensive line has been healthy. I mean, we've waited all this time for the offensive line to get healthy, and, I mean, you see what happens when they do. Tannehill wasn't sacked in this game. The run game, Jay Ajayi, he just went ballistic. And, I mean, for weeks we sit here and we talk about what could happen each week to outcome the game, and it always comes down to stop the run and run the ball. And, I mean, this was one of those games where the Steelers came into this. They were a high-octane offense, and we all thought that they were just going to run right down our throats. And, I mean, the Dolphins stepped it up, Kiko Alonso, the entire defense. And then, like Sutton said, Byron Maxwell, he looked pretty good against Antonio Brown. And then, again, in the run game, Jay Ajayi just went crazy. And when you have that run game going and that offensive line, you can see what Tannehill does, which is why, I mean, one week we're sitting here, we're down on him, and the next week he just turns around and he had a good game, and he made some terrific throws. That one on the sideline was just unbelievable.
Isn't it amazing what an offensive line can do, what a good offensive line can do? We saw Tannehill didn't get sacked once against the Steelers, and we saw him having plenty of time in that pocket. Obviously, sometimes that pocket collapses a little bit, and you got to move around and step up, and he did a good job of that. And it's so refreshing, though, to have a head coach in Adam Gase to tell the truth in his press conferences. Yeah, he has that coach speak, but he's also very upfront. And so is Vance Joseph, and so is Clyde Christensen, and so is Darren Rizzi. And I love that about this coaching staff. Adam Gase told us last week against the Titans after the game, he said, no matter who you had back there, you cannot evaluate the quarterback when he's on his back more than half the times that he drops back. And in fact, he even said there was one play the day after he reviewed the film, there was one play where Tannehill wasn't even done with his drop back, and he got sacked. And it's just, and the fans, you know, we want to get mad at someone. And I went off on a tirade last week against the Titans, and I blame our beloved Finsider editor, Kevin Nogle, for that, because he asked me to do the instant reaction. So as I was taking notes throughout the entire game, I decided to spew off on Twitter in the moment, which I always try not to do, because it is so bad. And when I wake up in the morning, it's like when you go to bed drunk, right? And you do something and you think it's great. You know, you hooked up with a girl and you're like, this is the greatest thing in the world. You wake up the next morning, you're like, what the hell did I just do?
You had a walk of shame. Text of shame.
Tweet of shame. For me, that's the Miami Dolphins. I will tweet stupid crap on Sundays after the game on a bad loss. And then I'll wake up the next morning like, what the hell did you write? And I just, you know, I've tried and I've gotten better at not doing any live reaction during the game. So, but Kevin, that is your fault. If you listen to this, I'm blaming you specifically for it. Speaking of, you know, offensive lines and doing things the right way, Adam Gase is really changing the culture in Miami with a hard-ass-nosed approach. And we saw that last week before he went on the air. Billy Turner was cut, Jamil Douglas was cut, and Dallas Thomas was cut. And Adam Gase does not care who you are, folks. He benched Mario Williams on Sunday for a few series. He started Cameron Wake and Andre Branch. Okay, he benched Byron Maxwell several weeks ago. This high-priced player, he did not care. And now look at Byron Maxwell shut down Antonio Brown on Sunday. What else has he done? He said in his press conference that it's hard to change the culture overnight. He admitted that there's some players who aren't yet buying into it. The thing with Adam Gase, which reminds me of Don Shula, and I've said this before, and please don't think I'm comparing him to Don Shula, because I'm not, because he hasn't done nothing yet in the NFL, but the attitude and the way he carries himself and the way he treats the players, he demands respect from his players. But he's also telling his players that he doesn't care who you are. He doesn't care if you're Matt Cannata, host of Finsider Radio. If you're not doing your job, then that's what it is. And how I just want to, you know, see what you've taken away from Adam Gase and his approach. Do you think over time that this approach will wear down, or do you think that it is sustainable and he can continue to take this hard-nosed approach?
I think it's sustainable because, like you said, as we've seen so far, the guys that he did end up benching, Maxwell and left the Jai at home against Seattle, I mean, they both responded pretty well. So, I mean, yeah, a lot of people were thinking that he might lose some players by cutting Dallas Thomas and Billy Turner, who, I mean, Billy Turner, he could have had some kind of role with the team as far as a backup standpoint, but Dallas Thomas, he should have been cut a long time ago. So, I mean, for Gase to recognize the problem on that offensive line and tell people, yes, if you're not doing your job, if you're going to be a liability against the pass or in the run game, your job's on the line. And I mean, I like to see that from Adam Gase. That's not something you would have seen really from Joe Philbin. I mean, yeah, sure, he let players go like Vontae Davis, but didn't he want to go to the bathroom and in training camp or something? So I mean, it all comes back to Adam Gase. I mean, I do like what he's doing, and I do think in the end it should continue to show some success.
Hey, MC Money, we, you know, House was mentioning the run game, and we have a caller, Dolphins Fan for Life. He wants to talk about the Dolphins.
Oh, no.
The Bills' success on offense.
All right, we will switch gears for this caller, because, listen, this is a open-door policy show, and if you want to jump in at any time, you are free to jump in. I tell that to my wife every night. I said, if you want to jump in any time, you are free to jump in, and she never does. But you, my callers, are free to jump in. And Dolphins Fans for Life, welcome to Finsider Radio. What can we do for you?
All right, well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the resurgence of the Bills who we're facing this week. And one of the biggest catalysts is running from the pistol formation. And I'm wondering if possibly we should mimic that success.
Thank you for calling. Yeah, thank you for calling in, Dolphin Fan for Life. We always appreciate you coming on to the show. And you mentioned, you know, running from the pistol formation. And so, and I'm going to throw this one to you. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, you know, Ajayi has experience with that from college. He's used to that. So I don't think it would be that huge of a transition. But I also don't know that it's our success running depends on formation. I thought we ran a lot of under center plays this past week, and that's where we found a lot of success with the Giants, with those off tackle plays with Tannehill under center. So I don't think it's necessary that we have to go pistol to get some success, but I think what maybe more what he was saying was that we sprinkle that in to get a little bit of variety, and of course I think that we'd be able to sprinkle that in there.
All right, and we jumped around there. We're going to go back to the Bills in just a little bit, but let's move back to
all right,
Sunday.
Man. Thanks.
And Sutton, You didn't get a chance to talk about Adam Gase and his hard-nosed approach. Just want to get your thoughts real quickly on that before we move on.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the only culture to have in the NFL, and that's, you know, you perform or you sit. You know, it's a results-based business. So you don't like to see players get benched for lack of effort. So I think that's something that's dealt with rightfully in a harsh fashion. So I don't really mind that approach with Gase. I think that's an important attitudinal sort of mindset to create with the team. That's why I'm on record. You know, this is a guy that I'm going to go down with. You know, whether or not we make the playoffs this year or next year or the year after that, just the culture that I can see him trying to do, that's something I can rally behind, because you look at the AFC East, you know, you have to go to Foxborough, you have to go to Orchard Park, and you have to go to East Rutherford every year. And when you have to go to those places in the winter, you cannot go to those places as a weak team. You can't go up there as a soft team. So we really have to be hard-nosed. And I can appreciate a coach coming in here and trying to do that in a rational way. It's not in an erratic way. I think last week when, you know, Dallas Thomas and Billy Turner were released, we thought, oh, well, he's just sending people to the guillotine because he snapped or something. And I just wasn't willing to buy that narrative. And I think that we're going to see a coach that can really establish some limits and then set those limits and then be able to follow through with those.
You know, Adam Gase is a guy that almost makes you want to run through a wall. And he's not really rah-rah motivational guy, but the way he speaks and the way he commands, you know, the room and the way he just presents himself is something that you just want to respect. And I'll admit, he wasn't my first choice as head coach. Hugh Jackson was. Adam Gase was number two. But listen, if Adam Gase continues to coach like this and demand the respect of his players, then I think he will be in Miami for a very long time. And for you guys listening to us, we know that we make you want to run through a wall for us. So that's why we're going to jump into our fan interaction session right now. And we actually have another caller on the line. And I think this is a record, guys, two callers in one show. And this one's an interesting one, because the NFL Network talked about this the other day. And it's somewhere out of left field, and it's kind of timely because we were talking about Ryan Tannehill having up and down and Adam Gase getting his quarterback in. But this caller wants to talk about the Dolphins possibly trading for Tony Romo, which, again, was mentioned on the NFL Network the other day. Welcome to the show.
You guys.
How you doing tonight?
Good, good, good. Good to be on the show. Longtime listener. I just wanted to bring up some topics that I was very interested in. One, however, was this impending Romo trade. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you're good. Go ahead.
Yes, no. So I was watching NFL Network. They're talking about possible landing spots for Romo to Miami. I know Tannehill. Oh, sorry, my wife's yelling at me. Tannehill, impressive game Sunday. I must commend your win in, against the Steelers. That was very impressive. However, I just wanted to know, as a Dolphin fan base, what are your thoughts on Romo possibly landing in Miami?
Well, thank you for calling. Tell your wife to stop yelling at you. Tell her to go to bed. It is FinFan Radio time. I'm going to throw this one to you. What do you think about the Dolphins trading for Tony Romo?
I don't like it. I mean, he's 36 years old. Last time he was out there, he took another injury to his back. So, the last two times he got hit, he's been knocked out, really. So, I don't like it. I think Tannehill at this point, I don't know that we're going to win this year either. So, Tony Romo might go to a contender that's ready to make a playoff push. Maybe if Pittsburgh, if, say, Ben Roethlisberger's hurt, I don't know how they'd carry both those contracts, but you know what I mean? A team that's getting ready to contend is a better fit for Tony Romo than the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, and Tony Romo, in Miami, that's just a stupid, stupid trade. I know we appreciate our callers, obviously, but for the NFL Network to even mention it in the first place is a little outrageous. Because, I mean, if the Dolphins go to a different quarterback, they're not going to Tony Romo. I can tell
you
that much right now.
Exactly.
All right, so let's move on to the Finsider Radio live thread on thefinsider.com. If you're not in there, jump in there right now. It is highly entertaining and highly questionable, so do not let your kids read any of the comments. Sutton House, what do we have going on there? Why don't you read the question and then answer it right away?
Okay, probably the most important question I've seen on here was posed by me, and it's directed to you. And the question is, when you come to Cleveland in a couple weeks, how many girly drinks will you drink before you pass out? Will it be 3 or will it be 4? Please answer.
Is this a question for me?
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, that's you.
All right, so as soon as I get there, I'm going to order a Malibu Bay Breeze, followed by a frozen margarita with salt on the rim. And then, of course, closing out the night with sex on the beach. Not literally sex on the beach because, you know, there's no beaches in Cleveland. But when you start talking about Lake Erie, you know, then you start getting a little, you know, a little crazy over there. But, yeah, I'm very much so a lightweight. Literally after 2 or 3 beers, I am done for. So, Sutton, I am looking forward to partying with you in just a few weeks and letting you show me what Cleveland is all about. All right, next question.
Daytona Dolphin. He asked, can the Dolphins have a repeat performance against Buffalo, or was the last game just a fluke? It's hard to say with this team. I mean, 1 week you're down against Titans. You just think, wow, the season's over. It's time to look at the draft. And then they bounce back and dominate a Pittsburgh team that I even earlier in the season said might be Super Bowl contenders. So, I mean, it's just up and down each week for me. I do think they can. They just need to – I mean, Buffalo's defense is they're pretty damn good. So, I mean – the Dolphins, the offensive line needs to remain healthy. They need to establish the run early, and I do think that they can have a repeat performance if everything goes the way it looked last week.
All right, Sutton, what else do we have in the live thread right now?
I got Agent J78 and a couple
Agent
of the questions.
Agent J, he's one of our regulars.
Yeah, he's a good one. So he asked, if Jones is, in fact, out, what are the thoughts of Culliver becoming the free safety when he's activated? And kind of a follow-up with that is, when will we see someone beside the safety get an interception? So the first question about Culliver is, I've not known him to play free safety, so I think he comes in and play corner, and it's not like we could use a corner with Xavier Howard still hobbled up. So I think he comes in and challenges for snaps at the boundary corners with McCain still playing the slot corner. So hopefully he can come in and play boundary corner, but that's where he's found success in the NFL, and it's never been his play on the field. It's always, can he stay on the field, whether it be injury or disciplinary reasons. So once we get him on the field, I think he'll maybe be able to have an influence on both of those questions that he asked, because he, you know, asked about somebody else other than a free safety getting an interception, and it seems like Culliver is a strong candidate to come out and try to make a play right off the bat.
Yes, and let's switch gears now from the live thread to Twitter. We'll come back to the live thread in just a bit, but I know Bob Carruth, one of our favorite listeners and one of my favorite followers. By the way, if you have a job for Bob, I'm a poet and I don't even know it. If you have a job for Bob, please send him a tweet at Bob Carruth. He needs one. He is looking for one. Help a fellow Dolphins fan out. I know he sent in a bunch of questions earlier today because he doesn't have a job right now and he has no life. So he's just tweeting away at us all day long. One of his questions to us was, would Tom Garfinkel be able to take over the role of Mike Tannenbaum? And, yes, I do think that Tom Garfinkel is more than capable of running the football operations. But, honestly, with his area right now of what he's doing with the operations side, that is just a whole ton to be taking on right now. And to do both, I think, would be a disservice to the Dolphins organization. House, what else do we have on Twitter coming in to Finsider Radio?
Just real quick to piggyback on that, do you think Marino would be in line for that kind of job?
So here's the thing about Marino, and here's some inside information for you guys. The Dolphins, as of last year, were trying to get him more involved in the organization, but Marino's kind of pushed back on that a little bit because he enjoys what he does for the team as kind of that ambassador type where he doesn't have a whole lot of responsibility. You know, it's just kind of go there and go here and represent the Dolphins organization at these various high-profile events. But Marino has also expressed interest in the same breath of becoming more involved in a hands-on role. So, and I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, I don't know what everything that Marino does there. I know he's an advisor. I know he helps out with Garfinkel. I know he helps out, yes, with even Ryan Tannehill in the quarterback's room. And that's a little more inside information besides Peyton Manning as well. But, yeah, I'm not sure if Dan Marino is up to that job. Remember last time he had it for like 3 days and stepped down. But that remains to be seen because I do know he wants to get more involved in some capacity.
Okay, so back on track. Bob Carruth, again, he's the only guy asking questions on Twitter, so I weed it through,
hey,
try to find one.
Bob. We love Bob.
Could you see Parker being benched for lack of effort? Didn't look enthused at times on Sunday. Based on what Gase has done so far, I mean, I wouldn't put it past him, but I do think Parker – I agree with Bob. I was at the game. I saw as the game ended and the players are walking through the back to the locker room. I mean, you saw excitement in most of their faces. And to me, Devontae Parker just looked like he was just out of it. I mean, there are guys going up to fans, shaking their hands. And Devontae Parker, I don't even know if he smiled. So, I mean, for me, I don't know what it is with him. I know he's been struggling with his route running. Some of that, he looks a little bit lazy. But, I mean, for me, Devontae Parker is a big-time receiver, and the Dolphins need him if they want to continue to win this year. So, I mean, I find it hard to believe they'll bench him, but based on what they've done so far, I wouldn't put it past Gase.
All right. Yes, very good point. How? Read another question from Bob and then throw this question to Sutton.
Okay, here we go. With both Sims and Cameron both likely out, will Darty be called up, or do you think they go out and pick somebody up?
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, Marquise Gray is going to be in. Is Dominique Jones, is he out? Is there?
I think he's in. So, I mean, I think they're.
Those two, I think you could bring them in. I don't know that calling up Duarte is absolutely necessary. Although the tight end play did seem a little bit better last week somehow. That was kind of weird, wasn't it? I actually remember our tight ends making plays and our tight ends making plays that end up getting negated by penalties and stuff too. So don't forget that Dominique Jones catch in the corner of the end zone. So it was nice to see some production out of our tight ends. So that's why I'm not really in desperation mode with our tight ends. I think we're just fine going into what we have this Sunday.
Adam Gase did say in his press conference yesterday that Duarte needs some more work. He is pleased with Marquise Gray, and a lot of people in Davie are very excited about the potential that Marquise Gray has. And I think the Dolphins may have a diamond in the rough in Marquise Gray. I noticed this guy a few weeks ago when he laid out a very nice block against the Cleveland Browns for Jay Ajayi to get the game-winning touchdown on that drive. So I think he's going to do very well.
He's a hell of a special team player, too, I think I've noticed.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
Good special team player.
Sutton, give us one more from the Finsider Radio live thread on the Finsider.com, and then we'll move on.
Okay, so we got. So with the starting offensive line back together, will we see Tannehill be involved more in the running game? And that's from Agent J78 again. I don't know that we want him to be more involved than he was the last few weeks. If you remember the first couple of weeks of the season, he was our leading rusher. So I don't know that we want him to be that much more involved in the running game than he already is. Now, could we sprinkle in some more zone read type plays? Yeah, I think we could stand to do that, but I don't think that it's a pressing need per se. I think it's more of a sub package thing, not necessarily. We were able to run very well last week, so we only need to do that kind of stuff if we have to manufacture rushing yards in other ways.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for your questions. If we didn't get to them, we're going to try to get to the rest of them before the end of the show. Let's move on to Rashad Jones and the impact the Dolphins are most likely going to be losing him for the rest of the season. I know he's getting a second opinion. He may try to play through it, but more than likely, it is a devastating blow to the defense. And earlier in the podcast, at the top of the show, I had mentioned that I talked to someone in Davie yesterday about the impact of losing Rashad Jones. And we all know that Rashad Jones isn't the greatest in pass coverage, but as far as in the run game, he has stopped quite a few long touchdown runs this season by being that last guy to stop the running back before breaking open into the field and scoring a touchdown. And he's probably the Dolphins' best linebacker, if we are being honest with each other here. But this person said that the leadership that Rashad Jones brings to the table, not only on the field but off the field as well, is something that cannot be replaced. They mentioned the intensity he brings when he's on the field during a game, during a practice even, is something that cannot be matched. So this is, you know, more than just the Dolphins losing a player and next man up. This is a guy that the Dolphins can't mentally replace and can't replace in terms of leadership and his ability to inspire others around him. Sutton, what do you think with losing Rashad Jones? I know no one can be compared to Rashad Jones on this team, but do you think there's someone that can step up and fill that void?
Well, I think the ultimate question is his absence, who does it put the most pressure on? And I think it puts the most pressure on the linebacking unit. And for the very reason that you alluded to earlier, he comes in and makes great plays even behind the line of scrimmage when he comes off the edge. But he's just always seems to be around the ball, whether it's a pass or a run. But especially in run defense, he always seems to be making contact within yards of the line of scrimmage. So I don't know that we have anybody on the team that's necessarily going to be able to do that. But I think playing Issa Abdul-Kaddous more in that roaming type safety, and that's why I'm kind of steering away from three and strong safety, because I think both safeties were kind of stressed to be able to do all sorts of different responsibilities. So I think Issa Abdul-Kaddous has the ability to roam a little bit better, and Michael Thomas maybe could come in and play the deep middle when we play cover one. So he would be more likely to play that middle field type a little bit better. So hopefully a combination of those things happen. But I also look for Neville Hewitt to come in and hopefully take some of the strain off of the running backs coming out into the flats, the tight ends, the other types of responsibilities that Rashad Jones so effortlessly that we didn't really see how he was doing that on the field, to have those types of players step up and kind of minimize the need for that replacement that comes in for Rashad to not have to do so many different things for this defense to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I think losing Rashad Jones, it's going to be a huge loss for this defense. He's probably our best player. Like Sutton said, he's an asset against the run, and, I mean, we're really going to see what these linebackers can do with him being out and potentially being out. And then, I mean, like he said, Michael Thomas is probably the best bet to fill in and play opposite of Kaddous if he moves over or whatever the Dolphins decide to do. But, I mean, Rashad Jones, he's a leader. He plays hard every single play, and, I mean, I'm sure the players around him feast upon that. So, I mean, losing Rashad Jones would be a huge blow if the Dolphins want to continue to compete this year.
We'll see how the Dolphins locker room reacts to this and plays on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. We know that the Buffalo Bills have kind of owned the Dolphins over the past several years. Rex Ryan has outcoached Joe Philbin in almost every aspect of the game. While the Dolphins have won a few games against the Buffalo Bills over the past several years, the one fact remains that Ryan Tannehill does not play well against the Buffalo Bills and Rex Ryan's defense. Will that change on Sunday with Adam Gase calling different plays? I'm not sure. Will it or will it not? House Sutton, what are your thoughts? House, you'll go first. Sutton followed right after him.
I think it will. I mean, Buffalo's definitely coming into this. I think they won, what, four straight after starting 0-2. So, I mean, they're hotter than ever.
Mm-hmm.
LeSean McCoy was a monster last week. And, I mean, our run game definitely stepped up against one of the better backs in the league and Le'Veon Bell, but, I mean, if the Dolphins want to have success, they got to stop LeSean McCoy. And also, most importantly, the Dolphins always seem to struggle against mobile quarterbacks. They can kind of roll out. I mean, we saw Mariota do it. I mean, we've seen it for years, the Dolphins have struggled against him. So Tyrod Taylor, I mean, the Dolphins got to find a way to contain him and keep him in the pocket and force him to make mistakes, because when he rolls out or they get that run game going, it's that offense is deadly.
Yeah, for me, and I was in attendance in the game in Buffalo last year where we got our ass kicked, and of course we got our ass kicked twice by Buffalo last year. But what I really noticed was how different the trenches were, and hopefully this Pittsburgh game is a sign that we are changing in the right direction, that we're able to at least neutralize the trenches and make this an even bout, because the last couple of years we've had to be so one-dimensional versus Buffalo that it's impossible to sustain the offense, you know, passing the ball 53 times and running it like 9 times. You know, you just cannot play NFL offense with that kind of play balance. So I think the number one key going into the Buffalo game is to stay balanced and be able to establish that run if possible. Marcel Darius might be back for Buffalo, but I think there'll be enough rust there that we should be able to establish some kind of balance. And if we are able to do that, then I think there's every reason to believe that we can stay into this game going into the fourth quarter. On defense, like Hout said, you have to keep Tyrod Taylor in the pocket. I saw it firsthand last year. He gets outside the pocket and he does some things, and we don't have the secondary to be able to stay with those wide receivers for too long. But I think if we can get an early lead and we can get our pass rush to him, then I think we're going to be in a good situation, because they are not a team that's built to come from behind. So I think if we can jump on them early and make them one-dimensional, then I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, and that's certainly the thing here against the Buffalo Bills. And we think we're having some technical difficulties right now with the live stream. We don't know if this part is going to be recorded and then put up later on. I certainly hope it does. If not, we're talking to ourselves right now, but we're going to finish the show. Okay, we're going to move into our predictions now for Sunday's game against the Buffalo Bills. Before I do that, I just want to mention that thing about Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill and opening up the playbook. What Adam Gase did against the Pittsburgh Steelers is went back to Tannehill's comfort zone, where he makes that quick read and throws the first guy that he sees open. And we may see more of that against the Buffalo Bills as Adam Gase tries to continue to rehab Ryan Tannehill and move forward with his development. All right, prediction time. What do we have from you, House?
For me, I'm going to stay optimistic because I know you guys hate when we don't. So I'm going to go 27-24 Miami. Andrew Franks, again, knocking in that game winner. I mean, he had a big week last week, so let's give him the game winner.
Sutton, what do you got?
I got Dolphins 23, Bills 21.
All right, like that's it. A two-point win. And for me, I'm going to go Miami 30, Buffalo 21. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this week's edition of Finsider Radio. We thank you again for joining us. We hope you enjoy the week and enjoy the game against the Buffalo Bills.